Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
How do we get the farm bill across the finish line for all of you this year? It is inexcusable that that has yet to happen. And I understand there are a lot of factors out of the control of those who are making the decision, but there is a new game in town, my friends, and we will do everything we can. And my commitment to you is that we get a farm bill done by the end of this year. Pray for that. Help us fight for it. And let's get it across the finish line.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
Together, I do believe we can avoid punting a full five-year farm bill for a third time and instead provide production agriculture the certainty you need to plan for the future. You deserve that, and I believe Congress will deliver with help from all of us.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A big break like we've seen in the equities, and off those highs we made just a few weeks ago to where we are now, is about, give or take, an 8.5% break in prices.
Talking equity markets, Dow, NASDAQ, S&P, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
It'll be interesting to see how the market reacts once it gets to the even 10% or so, which obviously will be a little bit lower in the S&Ps, and we'll see if we get any kind of stability there and or bounce. But in the meantime, my opinion is that a breaking equity market isn't necessarily friendly to consumers. And obviously, when it comes to commodities, we need the consumers to have a level of confidence out there to not really slow down their purchasing. And what that could do is translate into less restaurant stops, either eating in at the restaurant or takeout. It could also mean less buying of higher end cuts of meat, which can impact our beef markets. And if that ultimately works out that way, then just that general wealth effect of a breaking market would kind of cause the consumer to take a break. Now, that's one impact. There's many, many impacts. Another one I think is important is that when the equity markets break pretty hard, you tend to see a bid in the bond futures across the curve, typically. And what that will do is imply lower interest rates. And lower interest rates will have an impact on the value of our dollar. And what we've seen over the last couple of few weeks, as that's played out, is a weaker dollar. So in terms of the export market, that should be relatively friendly for the U.S. when the dollar starts to break, because it'll make our commodities that we export more affordable, shall we say, cost less relatively. And the big variable there, and the primary reason for, in my opinion, the market breaking like it has been all the uncertainty around the tariffs. So tariffs might actually mitigate the generally bullish impact that a weaker dollar could have. Now, it could work both ways, and I don't think we have enough time to really dive into all the possible scenarios. I know that of all the research I read, I'm an avid reader of many different opinions and different sources out there, and there's an argument for both sides of the equation. So we'll just have to see how this plays out, and only time is going to tell, all right? In the meantime, there's going to be a bit of uncertainty, and that's going to work its way into the market with the extreme volatility. So that, generally speaking, is where I see the primary impacts to the commodity markets could be from a hard-breaking equity market. But again, we got about 150 basis points lower till we get that 10% correction off the highs, and it'll be really interesting to see how the market, you know, acts once it gets down there.
But when it comes to ag, Brazil remains a major competitor.
Brazilian soybean harvest is reportedly around 60% complete versus about 53% on average. And then the Safrinha corn crop is about 84% planted, catching almost up to last year's 85% and outpacing the average by about 13%, which is normally 71%. So they've really caught up in terms of harvest of soybeans, and they've really caught up in terms of getting that Safrinha corn crop in the ground, which isn't necessarily a bullish thing for prices, generally speaking.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You, the farmers and ranchers and producers of America, are the backbone of this great nation.
Secretary of Ag, Brooke Rollins at Commodity Classic.
You wake up before the sun rises and work long hours in the heat, the rain, the snow, and the sleet. You weather drought and floods and blizzards and windstorms and plagues and all kinds of events that you can neither predict nor control. You raise the crops that nourish our citizens and millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of people around the world. You till the soil and care for the land that is one of God's greatest blessings to this beautiful country. Over the last 4 years, our farmers were often overlooked by Washington, D.C., as circumstances became more and more dire across our great countryside. As a result, the state of the ag economy, especially for row crop producers, is perhaps the worst it's been in 100 years. And I hear you when you tell me that. The department's latest net farm income update showed the decline in crop cash receipts over the last 2 years as the largest in recorded history. Farm inputs are up nearly 30% over the last 5 years, while prices for corn, soybean, sorghum, and wheat have plummeted by 30% or more over the last 3 years alone. The agriculture trade deficit is set to hit a record $49 billion in 2025. That is money directly from your bottom line. Fortunately, the era of economic malaise and decision paralysis ended the day that President Donald Trump took office. Today, I am here to share with you my vision for America's heartland. Working alongside each of you, we are going to chart a new course for American agriculture. We will not accept the failed policies of the past as excuses for what we can and must achieve over the next 4 years. We will not tolerate needless delays or layers of bureaucracy to get you the answers that you need and you deserve. And we won't stop at repairing systems that have long been broken. We will usher in a new era of prosperity and opportunity, innovation and revitalization in rural America. To be clear, farmers are among the greatest innovators in our nation. It is the federal government that needs to learn from all of you. The story of American agriculture is always about doing more with less. In my mother's lifetime, total farm output has nearly tripled, while total input use, such as land and labor, has declined. In my lifetime, the amount of feed a dairy cow needs to produce 100 pounds of milk has decreased by more than 40%. And during this time, stewardship of our land has decreased soil erosion by 50%. And in my two daughters and my two sons' lifetime, Luke, Jake, Anna, and Lily, cattlemen have added another 100 pounds of beef to a carcass. Meanwhile, American consumers spend roughly only 10% of their disposable income on food, which is the lowest and historically would say the lowest the world has seen. We owe this to hard work, innovation, and modern practices developed on your farms and by those partners in science who never stop trying to get better. When I hear people say that something needs to change in agriculture, I say, yes, United States ag changed yesterday, it's changing today, and it will surely change tomorrow. This is just how we do things in this country.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think probably the top item that is kind of in the wait and see mode or what's going to happen next is the economic assistance payments that were included in the year-end continuing resolution and supplemental appropriations package that the last Congress passed out late December in the lame duck session.
Jonathan Kappas is a farm policy expert, former administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency.
There's a total of $10 billion provided. There's a total of $31 billion provided for agricultural assistance, about 21 of that for hurricane, wildfire, and other kind of natural disaster relief. And we think in particular the just the devastation wrought by Hurricane Helene in places like North Carolina. And so that assistance is going out to help try to deal with some of that devastation. And then tucked into that was a $10 billion allocation for what was called economic assistance. We wrote about this early January on Farm Doc Daily, and that's the chart you see in front of you is the calculations. Basically, it uses a production cost and economic gain loss calculation to get a payment rate. So short answer is it looked at a 10-year average yield, the 2024 projected prices, and then it looked at the 2024 estimates for cost of production and made the difference between those two, the gain loss kind of benchmark, if you will, took 26% of that. There was a minimum payment rate using the statutory reference price, which kicks in for a couple crops, peanuts, rice, oats in particular. And then you got the 26% of the projected loss or that minimum payment rate. And so just kind of looking at the different payment rates, for those of you that, and this is on planted acres, by the way, so it's on all acres planted to the crop or 50% of the acres prevented from being planted to the crop. For corn and soybeans, we're looking at about $42.50 for corn and $29.50 for soybeans, respectively, and another $31.89 for wheat. Noticeably, that, like I said, that minimum payment rate kicks in for rice and peanuts and oats, or excuse me, barley, not oats, sorry, oats, kicks in for barley, which means that they're going to get a higher relative payment to the economic loss calculation. And in the case of barley, apparently there was not, the calculation did not produce an economic loss, but they get the minimum payment. So this is how that plays out. And look, the bottom line of uncertainty somewhat applies to this. I mean, if you've seen anything in the news, you've seen the substantial focus on cutting program spending and in some cases agencies, whole agencies. So there's a whole lot of uncertainty about it. And that applies to these funds. I presume that the Farm Service Agency is working on getting these dollars out. But that is a work in progress. And, with the uncertainty that's going on, I hate to either strike fear or give confidence in these payments that we just don't know about yet. So to be determined on the timing for these, but given everything that's going on, I think it's not unreasonable to think that these might be held up a little while at least. But stay tuned and talk to your Farm Service Agency office for the details as it comes out.
We now know the program will be called the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, or ECAP. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The last 2 weeks, I've been across the country. I think I've spoken to almost 200 farmers directly through different and various communications efforts, roundtables, one-on-one phone calls. It's been really important to me that I connect directly with you, the producer, that I don't just sit in this big office in Washington and look out over the mall and see the Washington Monument. It's actually a pretty cool office.
Speaking at Commodity Classic, new Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
But still, that I'm not there very much, that instead I am out with all of you and hearing your concerns. I know that part of that conversation has been patiently awaiting more details on the disaster and economic relief passed by Congress this past November, December. And given the dire state of the farm economy in the last 2 weeks since I've been on the job, we have been working very diligently and as quickly as humanly possible, understanding the urgency of getting these funds out the door. Our approach is guided by three principles. We want the process to be simple, transparent, and fast. My team has been working to stand up this process. Today, I am proud to announce that the Economic Assistance Program will be called the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, ECAP. You know, we love acronyms in ag, don't we? And at USDA. ECAP is the new program to help us distribute that $30 billion in funds that the Congress passed in December. They gave us 90 days to start distributing that first $10 billion in economic assistance, and we are on track to beat that and get that money starting to move immediately in the next few weeks. I've asked my team to think creatively about how to continue to develop a much more streamlined application process, because the last thing we want to be is the bottleneck to get the funds that are so desperately needed. In cases where we have information already on file, a pre-filled application will be sent to you. FSA will use the 2024 acreage reporting data you previously filed to initiate that application process. I mean, this is just common sense. Why wasn't this happening before? Now we're moving into the new era of common sense at USDA. There will also be an opportunity for you to provide this information if you missed that window. You will be asked to review the information, sign, and return the completed application back to your local FSA service center. We are also developing tools to provide for fair and transparent standards for calculating payments. Just in case there was any doubt, it will not be based on DEI metrics, but instead will be based on need regardless of your skin color or geographic location. Which, again, I guess that was happening before. I'm very confused. We are simultaneously working on rapid implementation of the $20 billion in disaster assistance due to weather conditions outside your control. Unlike the previous administration, we will not delay for an entire year, and gone are the days of progressive factoring. No longer will you be required to turn in your tax returns. We will have much more to say on this specifically in the weeks ahead, but it's a new day at USDA. As President Trump works with Congress to extend and perhaps even expand the tax cuts, I will work alongside him to repeal the death tax once and for all. One of my greatest priorities is that we want you to continue the proud legacy of family farms, of second and third and fourth generation. And we got to get the government out of the way in order to allow you to do that. We will be working nonstop to do just that.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Tariffs are in the news. Tariffs have been in the news since November. And so let's dig in a little bit into what a tariff is.
Dr. Craig Lemoine is director of the Financial Planning Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
A tariff, simply put, is a tax on imports. Give you an example. Let's say that a home builder in Wisconsin imports lumber from Canada. If we put a 25% tariff on that lumber, then for every $100 of lumber pre-tariff, now that importer buys the $100 of lumber and cuts a check for $25 to the government as a tax. That lumber now costs the importer $125 instead of $100. So that importer then, when they sell that lumber or they build a house, they're going to have to reflect that increased tax they paid the government in the cost of those materials. And that, in a nutshell, is a tariff. Well, let's dig one layer deeper. When we think about why we use tariffs from an economic standpoint, we can use tariffs for a number of reasons. We can try to raise revenue from a federal government standpoint. We can participate in what's called protectionism as well. And either way, the idea is, okay, well, if we raise the cost of goods outside the United States, perhaps we're more likely to use goods generated inside the United States. Growing up, I lived in El Paso, Texas. And during my time growing up, there was an act that passed. It was the North American Free Trade Agreement. And you saw a bunch of textile companies like Levi's and, you know, things that made blue jeans pop up on the border of Mexico and the United States. The idea being that you would have American and Mexican management, and you would have typically employees from Juarez, and they would make the textiles, and textiles would then ship to the United States. So it was a way that we could make textiles without paying United States labor costs, which typically are more expensive than labor cost in Juarez, Mexico would be. So the idea of a tariff then kind of flies in the face of that free trade. Okay. And what we're looking at with this world of tariffs today is that we're kind of tariffing by country and not necessarily by industry. When there's some industries, the United States does a very good job, and maybe we have a domestic interest in that industry continuing, such as making cars in the United States. Right? Our ability to produce cars is the same as our ability to produce and weaponize those kind of things if we ever needed to. And so, yeah, you can make the argument that we need a strong, healthy car industry in the United States. So maybe if we put tariffs on automobiles or automobile parts, We would then see perhaps more people buying U.S. cars because they would be priced more affordably or cheaper than international alternatives. You could make an argument that perhaps if you're a big believer in bourbon, right, we put a big tax on tequila. Tequila is generally grown in Mexico and south of there. And so we would grow and make tequila in Mexico, what used to be $100 a bottle. Now we'd have $100 a bottle plus that tariff tax put on it. But to summarize a little bit about tariffs, the reason that we use tariffs might be to raise funds. It might be to protect American jobs, to grow American industries. And we can look at that from the slant that, okay, maybe perhaps that'll work. The danger of tariffs is that there are local economies and synergy economies and a real global economy that when we start to introduce tariffs become significantly less efficient and has different middlemen and different costs and fees and structures that weren't there in the past.
Dr. Craig Lemoine, Director of the Financial Planning Program at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
As you can remember, in the first term, President Trump will not forget our farmers.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins at Commodity Classic.
When he's negotiating with former foreign leaders, he is the ultimate deal maker, and he is going to ensure that our farmers are being traded fairly by our trading partners. I know firsthand how important trade is to your success, and I am committed as a very top priority to work with this president to travel this world and expand market access for all of our crops and all of our producers around America. Unfortunately, as we know, some of the barriers we face is that some wealthy countries have protectionist policies that discourage innovation, place unnecessary burdens on efforts to feed those in need, and deprive themselves and their countries of American-made progress products. As Dr. Norman Borlaug, an Aggie icon, if I may say, and others have observed, wealthy populations have many, many problems, while hungry populations have only one. America has never had a famine, and we never will, and that's because of you and your forefathers who have worked the land. That isn't going to change, even as agriculture changes. I am working with Secretary Bobby Kennedy as we speak on efforts to make America healthy again, but I am certain that we will do so in a way that does not compromise you and your farms and your farming practices. You can rest assured that I will always stand up for farmers and ranchers and will support the incredible work that all of you do to feed millions of hungry people here at home and around the world. Our farmers play a critical role in fueling our nation and helping the United States reclaim energy dominance. On his very first day in office, President Trump took action to support the year-round sale of E15 gasoline. And I am so looking forward to working with him and with my friend Lee Zeldin at the EPA to make more fuel with the best label made in the USA. Finally, we're going to carefully review every regulation instituted over the last 4 years and remove all those that stifle your production. As you all know, President Trump loves to get regulations and rules out of the way. If y'all remember when he came down that escalator in 2015, one of the very first things he said was that for every one new regulation, I'm going to get rid of two. And within our first year in the White House, we got rid of 22 old for every new. In our second year, it was 17 old for every one new. In our third year, we got down to 9 for every one. Rest assured that this administration will never rest until we get government off the back of all of our great innovators and entrepreneurs. But for me, especially for all of you who are tilling the land and ensuring we can feed the world. Finally, under the Biden administration, American ranchers and farmers face many harmful regulations, particularly from the EPA, which has severely limited access to critical crop protection tools, which help increase yields, use fewer inputs, and implement conservation practices. Again, I'll be working with my good friend and longtime policy partner, Lee Zeldin, at the EPA to unleash prosperity in rural America through a massive deregulation project. Our farmers who till the fields do not rest from their labor. Neither do our ranchers and our livestock farmers who care for their herds and flocks. And neither do the American mothers and fathers who rely upon us to see their children grow safe and to grow strong. They do not rest, and neither will we. You, America's farmers, know all this. I am proud to be among you, and I'm proud to fight that fight for the most American of industries by your side. And that's all of you.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
When it comes to U.S. meat production forecast for this year,
for 2025, we expect production to keep growing at a slightly higher rate than what we saw in 24. In contrast to 24, however, the declines in beef and turkey production will be more than offset by higher growth rates in pork and broiler production.
USDA livestock analyst Michael McConnell at this year's Agricultural Outlook Forum. Turning to meat trade projections for 2025.
The outlook is for lower beef and broiler exports, while pork exports are expected to grow. Beef exports are expected to be constrained by lower production levels expected in the coming year, while respective competitive stories for pork and broiler exports in 24 are expected to carry over in 2025.
And regarding prices,
cattle, hog, chicken prices are all expected to increase. Cattle will be supported by tight cattle inventories and resilient demand. Hog and chicken prices will be supported by higher cattle prices. And in terms of turkey prices, we have seen that the hen price fall substantially since peaking in 2022. Fairly significant production cuts have not thus far resulted in supported prices. We expect that to turn in 2025. However, with average prices still below a dollar, forecast is still relatively low by historical standards.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.